Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
Well, the man that's in the studio with me now has been behind the bars of more prisons than probably anybody you know, but he's no criminal. His name is Ron Nicol. He's the president and CEO of Prison Fellowship International, the Christian prison ministry that was founded by Chuck Colston back in the late 1970s. Ron's been working in criminal justice now for 40 years, and his organization has done some amazing things right around the world, 110 countries now, for those who have been incarcerated. Amazing stuff. So I'm glad he's here in Australia and with us now. Ron, welcome.
Thank you. Good to see you.
110 countries now from those early days in 76 when Chuck Colson, after the Watergate scandal, went to prison, became a Christian, realized, hey, there's a whole heap of work that can be done here. How would you wrap it up in a phrase?
Well, it's we've added a few countries since those 110. Mm. It's now 120.
Oh, is it?
Very interesting. We're basically a non-governmental organization that comes at the issue of crime and justice and the treatment of offenders from a faith-based perspective, recognizing that there are people who deserve to be in prison, and while they are there for crimes that they've committed, prison doesn't really change them for the good.
Mm.
And so we become involved in prisons all over the world, trying to do something that will change not only the offenders, but contribute back to the good of society.
Mm-hmm.
So that when a person comes back to the community, as most offenders do, they don't come back having learned a lot in the university for crime, but they come back as individuals who have changed. The tragedy is that in so many countries, we don't really see prisoners as human beings, and so we allow them to live in inhumane conditions.
Mm.
And so one of the things that Prison Fellowship does, wherever there's such a need, is to respond to that need. We have programs that, and here in Australia is one example, where we give prisoners an opportunity to express themselves through art. And some of them become actually very accomplished artists, but it's a way of allowing them to express themselves.
Mm.
But one of the things that we're really trying to do is bring people to a point where they recognize that they have done something wrong, that they have hurt other people, that change is possible. And sort of like an alcoholic, I guess, you can't make your way to sobriety until you recognize that you have a problem, that they've done something wrong. They can't help themselves. They can't set things right. They need help to change.
I think probably one of the striking examples of what Prison Fellowship can actually do in the justice system has got to be the Bella Vista prison in Colombia. Can you just describe that prison before the presence of Prison Fellowship, and then what has happened since? It's really quite a dramatic example of just what can happen when loving people who come in and befriend prisoners, but also bring the Christian message too, can actually work quite an amazing difference.
Well, Bella Vista prison was one of the most notorious prisons in all of, not only in Colombia, but throughout Latin America and probably the world. There were homicides as frequently as one a day. Some very terrible things that would take place there, such as individuals being decapitated and their heads being used for football. Gruesome, grisly, awful place, the kind of thing that you can expect when you take people who have committed very violent offenses and pack them all together in a single place and just leave them alone. Prison Fellowship became involved there, oh, I would say about 15 or so years ago, I don't know exactly when it was, through a small group of people who said, we ought to just see what we can do. We ought to go in and visit the prisoners the way Jesus said we should.
Mm.
And they began to do that, very miraculously, almost, I would guess. They obtained permission from the authorities who said, well, if you think you can make any difference, go ahead and do it. They connected with a couple of the inmates and just began helping them in practical ways. And some of them wanted to paint their cells because they were this very gray, institutional, muddy, dirty, gritty facility. So they brought dignity to the place. As they began to care for these men and began to talk to them about their own faith and talk to them about the possibility for change through Jesus Christ, some of the men changed, radically transformed. that had an impact on the institution. It made a difference to the other inmates. A core group of them had changed, and it just began expanding to the point where today I guess there are about 400 men who are part of a Christian fellowship group inside that institution of about 2,800, 3,000 prisoners. And violence is virtually non-existent in the prison
is that
today.
Right? Huh. Boy, they really are literally salt and light there, aren't they? But obviously, they've shone a light into that dark place.
They
even
have.
Though the whole population hasn't become Christians, I guess there'd be people coming in and out all the time, they've radically
There's
changed the culture
yeah.
of the place.
There's an influence, and it spreads beyond the prison. There was a period of time where they actually operated a little radio station inside the prison and did a program called Hope for Columbia. And it was inmates who had been transformed talking about their experience, talking about some of the reconciliation that was taking place between rival gangs. You know, really, prison is a microcosm of society.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a reflection of society. So the antagonism that you see in prison is something that exists in the community. Medellin, the city, is a place notorious for the drug cartels. One time there was the Medellin cartel, there was a Pablo Escobar gang, rival drug distribution networks. It's also home to some of the paramilitary groups that are so fractious in that country and cause so much violence. And so when some of the leading members of those cartels and the paramilitaries were transformed in prison, that was big news in the prison. It was also big news in the community.
Hmm.
And it was big news when these people came back to the community. And today, one of the things that we're seeing in Medellin and other parts of Colombia is that the people who were changed while they were in prison are coming back into the community as agents for change.
Mm.
They're being reconciled with their former enemies. They're reaching out to people that they hurt, trying to make amends. They can never restore the life of someone who was killed as a result of their actions, but they're reaching out to the surviving victims, and it is making a restorative difference in the community, not just in the prison.
Yeah. This is beyond education, isn't it? Beyond just, you know, prison rehabilitation programs, as important as I'm sure that they are. There is something that the Christian faith brings when a prisoner actually opens up his or her life to the indwelling presence of Jesus inside. That's when the change seems to happen.
Well, yeah, you know, I go back to the analogy of addiction or alcoholism, that you can give a person all of the education in the world and it doesn't change the inside. Something has to happen on the inside of an individual that completely changes their reason for living,
mm.
Their values, their orientation toward life, and that is an encounter with Jesus Christ.
Mm.
You've got to get a power beyond yourself to make that change.
Yeah. Ron Nicol is with us. This is Open House. Across the nation, prison fellowship. Folks of believers who are going in and befriending prisoners in prisons in now 120-odd countries right around the world, and just the change that that's actually bringing. One thing that prison fellowship has been really big on is this notion of restorative justice. It's such a key idea that has been around for a couple of decades now, but you in particular, your groups have really championed the notion of restorative justice, where, and if I can give a very rough, and you're probably going to be cringing inside, Ron, as I give this rough definition, but basically the offender and the person offended, you're bringing them together, whereas normally those two people are forever separated, to help them restore the relationship, so to speak.
Well, that's certainly a very big part of it. You know, sometimes I think the term restorative justice is an unfortunate term because it's really about doing justice. We live in societies, I'm sure here in Australia, just as we do in Canada and in America and other parts of the world, where we've lost an understanding of what justice is really all about. We tend to look at justice as being all about punishment, you know, just desserts.
Mm-hmm.
What you give is what you better get. We see that justice is done when an offender has been apprehended, he's arraigned before, or she's arraigned before the court, they're found guilty, and they're punishment, period. End of the story.
Mm.
And we think that that's justice. Justice works when that happens. But justice is from the same root word as justification, and to justify something is to bring it back into a right relationship.
Isn't that a different definition?
A wholeness. Mm. So we see justice as being about healing the damage that's done by crime. It's not just about punishment, although punishment is part of that equation. It's about repairing damage. And there's a lot of damage done by crime, not only to the victim in terms of bodily harm in some cases, but in those crimes we sometimes call victimless crimes, you know, the drug abuse, the offenses where it's just a person doing damage to themselves, but also property offenses. There's a lot of damage that comes to the community, and we as a community pay a price for that damage. Increased cost of policing, the cost of running a justice system, the increased cost of goods and services to account for the loss through theft. And presently, the justice system does very little to address the damage done by crime. Mm. We simply address the perpetrator or the offender from a punitive or a retributive perspective, and we don't try to address either the victim, even the victim's hurt, the victim's loss, or the communities. So the perspective that we try to bring to justice is an understanding that justice is about making things right in relationships, repaying the community for some of the damage that's done by involving victims and offenders together to help the offender understand that he or she has actually hurt a real person, and to help the victim understand that the offender is a real person who maybe didn't have wasn't out to get them personally, mm-hmm. to help them understand each other, and then to work out how the damage can be repaired, how the relationship can be restored, if there was a relationship. But if just leaving the victim alone in their anger,
yes.
And hostility is a burden that many of them carry for the rest of their lives.
Can you give us an example of something that's, you know, a case where you actually brought two people together or two community, or, you know, a person back with a community or something?
We operate a program in quite a number of countries called the Sycamore Tree Project, and it brings victims and offenders together in prison. Now, these would not be the direct victims of those particular offenders, but people who've been victimized. They come into prison to tell their story to this group of men, and the men tell their stories. And in the process of them telling their stories to one another, there's an empathy that develops, an understanding that develops. Hmm. There's a fellow by the name of Ron Flowers, and Ron was a pretty drugged out fellow who committed murder during the course of a theft, and a young woman lost her life in the process. Ron went through one of the Sycamore Tree programs, and as a result of that, he said, now I can't get back together with my victim, but I wonder if I might make contact with her family. And eventually that did happen. A very interesting reconciliation process took place.
Difficult, I imagine. There would have been some resistance from the family themselves?
Well, it was interesting. The family had never felt closure. Even though Ron had been sentenced to prison for life, they didn't feel that there was any closure. They didn't know the rest of the story. Why had Ron done this to their daughter? Mm. What was he thinking? Did he know her? All of these questions. And eventually the full story came out. It did bring closure. They ended up saying, well, you know, we can't get our daughter's life back, but we'll adopt you as our son. Sort of symbolic sort of way. And they took him in. They cared for him. They treated him like he was their
son. Into their home?
Son. Into their home after he was released, yes.
That is transformation, isn't
after it? After he was put on parole, I should say.
That's something else, isn't it? I mean, it really is. It's healing both sides of the party when it comes to some crime that's actually been done.
Victims do need to learn how to forgive. They'll never get over the hurt and the pain until they let go and forgive.
How much is the restorative justice program thought idea now getting into mainstream prisons? Do you know of it being used very much in, say, even Australian prisons at all?
Well, restorative justice is something that we've worked on internationally, and we were very instrumental in getting the United Nations to adopt principles on the application of restorative justice in criminal justice settings. And that's been pretty universally adopted as a policy or as a direction. But the actual practice of restorative justice has not penetrated the typical criminal justice system. You have small restorative justice projects mm-hmm. That are alternatives to the criminal justice system. And all of the research indicates that restorative justice is far more effective. It's far more cost-effective. It brings greater satisfaction to the victims. It reduces reoffending rates. And yet the public and the kind of the system being what the system is reverts to form, and that is our typical retributive approach to doing justice.
Yes,
I think it'll only change when the public changes. There's very little political courage in the world today to change the system because politicians, kind of put their finger in the air to see which way the wind is blowing, and the wind of public opinion is very anti-criminal, anti-offender. As we were talking earlier, lock them up, throw the key away. Until we are able to educate the public and the public buys into the fact that there is a better way of doing justice, that we are not going to stand for the cost that we are paying today to keep people locked up in prison who don't need to be there, that we don't want to see these reoffending rates of 60% plus. I mean, it's an abysmal failure. That when the public gets a hold of that and says, no, stop it, we don't want this anymore, we want to do real justice in a way that begins to heal some of the damage done by crime, politicians will find the courage to change.
They will. So in an ironic way, maybe those of us who are on this side of the bars are actually the ones holding back those within the bars inside from actually being freed,
exactly.
being restored.
Exactly.
Now there's a thought. So next question, how can we be changed then to start thinking less retributively and start thinking more restoratively?
We have to spend some time thinking about what we want from a justice system that works. What are the outcomes? And once we've thought that through as community groups, as church groups, as people from various social organizations, and we begin to say, this is what we expect from our justice system. These are the outcomes we demand. That'll make a difference.
Any good books that you can recommend for people in the street? You know, street-level books that are worthwhile reading?
Street-level books. You know, maybe that's the challenge to us, that we have not done the best job possible in making this idea accessible.
Because if it stays in academia, or just in the relative department.
You're right. Very good point. And
There's a new calling.
Well, maybe. One of the things that we're seeing through projects like the Sycamore Tree is when people from the community become involved in these projects and they say, wow, you know, these people do have real stories. They are real human beings. They can change. The damage can be not undone, but the damage can be healed. We do see that people's attitudes are changing.
So if they get involved in a prison fellowship group.
Well, that's an excellent way.
Start to see the Sycamore Tree program in action.
Yeah, that's an excellent way of understanding it.
Well, Ron, always good to talk to you. Nice to catch up with you again.
Good to have been with you again.
Yeah, Ron Nicol, who is the CEO and president of Prison Fellowship International. The Australian website is prisonfellowship.org.au.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.